Oh, how we doing, brother?
I'm doing excellent today. How about yourself?
It is Monday. I am less. I'm doing good. It was a long weekend with adult beverages. A bar crawl. Okay. A basketball game. I even went roller skating.
I saw you on the old reels there.
Yeah, it's my niece's birthday, so
good form though. Yeah, you're rolling.
It's like riding a bike, baby.
No, that is not like riding a bike whatsoever. I've never fallen off a bike as many times as I have on roller skates.
When was the last time you've roller skated?
Oh boy. Whew. I mean, at this point, you're talking possibly decades. It's been a long time. But it's probably been about that long since I rode a bike, too. But I feel like I could definitely ride a bike and not fall over.
Hey, challenge accepted.
I don't
you don't want to try? Roller skate. Yeah, man. So supposedly, my brother's been taking his daughter, my niece, to the skating rink that I grew up going to, Skateland USA, right there in Kannapolis. Yeah. So she had her birthday party, you know, they and nothing has changed on the inside. Not a thing. Same.
Still drink stains from when we were around spilling stuff everywhere.
1,000%. Yes. The DJ booth is the exact same. The smell of just stale feet is still there. It's just...
If it ain't broken, right? If it ain't broken... I mean, there might be some broken stuff in there.
No, but, you know, she had her birthday party there, man. It was dope. It was dope, man. So, good. Before that, was that on Saturday. Got up with some of the fellas, and we had some green beer libations in Uptown Charlotte and, you know, enjoyed... each other's company as brethren.
I was around the corner enjoying a Brazilian steakhouse. It was amazing.
I have not been there since you got married.
I went on it was the day after, because we went there on the 15th of March. That was the day of my wedding.
Wait, you just had your wedding anniversary?
Yeah, it was Friday.
Your wedding anniversary was Friday.
This is correct.
Happy anniversary.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. Thank you.
I, once again, didn't get you anything.
Consistency is what we look for. That movie in a bud.
Oh, man, that was good.
You are doing great, sir. Doing good.
Yes.
So, yeah, my wife went out and had us an anniversary dinner.
Nice, man. Congrats, brother. How many years now?
Mm-hmm. We'll be in our... So this was our fifth, so we're going into our sixth year of marriage.
And together for how long total?
15.
That's love right there, bro. That's love right there, bro.
15 years.
That's the real deal. Holy field right there, guys.
Oh, yeah. Still doing very well.
Nice.
Actually, looking forward to another 5 years. So
good deal.
Longer than
good
that, deal. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. Baby steps. Baby steps. Yeah, it's about this. And then Friday was JP came into town, so he went to the Suns Hornets game and watched the Hornets just get absolutely wrecked. So it was a very, very long weekend.
Yeah.
Good stuff though, man. Not bad at all. Just finally recovered about 7 minutes ago. So
yeah.
I'm ready for the week.
Let's go. Well, so I assume you did not go to work today.
Oh, I did.
Oh my goodness. I was gonna ask why. Hey,
and I was there. I had some meetings that I conducted.
No.
Let's did go. Did I zombie through them? Yeah, yes, I did. Mm. Did I get a standing ovation? Yes. There was no standing ovation. It was actually via Zoom.
Yeah, he's like, I stood up, and it was awkward, actually.
It was real awkward. Welcome to this episode of Movie in a Pod. I am Clyde Smith.
And I am Javier Villalobos.
On this week's episode, we're discussing trailers for In the Land of Saints and Sinners, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter is Dead, in our movie of the week, The American Society of Magical Negroes. That's a lot of words, bro. Get a sip of water real quick after saying all of those titles.
That was a lot.
I'm going to fire our producer guy who puts all this crap together.
You really did have the most words ever to say in that intro.
I'm the worst writer ever. I know, dude.
every single title.
9 words. Guys.
Though, man. You did it.
Power through. Hey, team, we got some new trailers here for you. We have a new Liam Neeson, this time not in America, back in the old country.
Oh, no.
Okay. And then we have a remake of a late 80s, early 90s classic starring Christina Applegate. This is a remake reimagining with some colored folks. Team, we have a YouTube page. Watch our full reaction to these trailers and our full pods on our YouTube page. There's a link tree in the show notes. Click, like, subscribe, share, and bring some friends, guys. Keep liking so we can keep on making some great content for you guys. All right, team. So that was the trailer for In the Land of Saints and Sinners. According to IMDb, in a remote Irish village, a damaged father is forced to fight for redemption after a lifetime of sins. What price is he willing to pay? In the Land of Saints and Sinners, that's the thing. That's the word. Sins can't be buried. Directed by Robert Lorenz, starring the man, the myth, the living legend, obviously Liam Neeson, with a whole cast of people. Basically, I know Carrie Condon, Syrian Hands, and Jack Gleason. That's about it.
There you go.
What are your thoughts on this, brother?
I had very little, like, the trailer didn't bring me very much interest in what was happening.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of stuff that didn't quite, like, put a story together. It was just, like, a bunch of scenes. And for me, it didn't feel like anything was, like, going anywhere very important.
We call those trailers. They're little vignettes they put before movies.
No. This one's not.
Didn't pass the bar for you? The trailer's
supposed to make you a little interested. Supposed to make you a little interested. And it really didn't. Like, it didn't make me very interested. Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like a bunch of scenes that were kind of doing the same thing over and over and over and over. Like, it was just like the same scene.
Kind of like smacked together.
Yeah. So I have no clue what's going on.
Well, what I gathered out of this, at least, is a movie about a man who is trying to stop being, he's like an assassin, he's like a cleaner, he's like a fixer in Ireland or whatever, and he doesn't want to do that anymore, right? He's kind of forgotten how many people he's killed, whose lives that he's, how many families' lives he's destroyed and stuff like that. But, you know, obviously when that stuff has happened, we're looking intrinsically. We're not looking external. So we don't know who might be around the corner, who might be coming after us. And then I see this Carrie Condon character come into town with her crew, and they start wrecking, making havoc for him because they want to put him down or something. And now that's what I got, but that was the first, I don't know,
I mean,
50 seconds of the trailer. The rest, minute and 10 seconds, didn't really make any sense. Like, were they working together at one point in time? Were there bigger forces coming? You know what I mean? I don't know. I have so many questions.
Yeah.
Is somebody going to say release the Kraken? That'd be awesome, you know? Whatever.
No, I mean,
I'm ready.
It'd be pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah, other than what you said, it was just, it didn't really lead nowhere, I didn't think.
Definitely. So what we will do, like always, guys, we'll throw In the Land of Saints and Sinners on our socials. Let us know your thoughts. Yeah. The cool thing about this is, like, I would pull up to the theater and watch this. You know, it's only an hour 46, so it's not long. And, you know, it might be some of his best work in a while. So who knows? Team, with those on our socials, let us know your thoughts. Also, let us know what your favorite Liam Neeson movie is. Talk to us, team. All right, team. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. According to IMDb, Tanya finds her summer plans canceled when her mom jets off for a last-minute retreat and the elderly babysitting who arrives at her door unexpectedly passes away. So, we got very little from this trailer. But,
yes,
I do know this is a remake, reimagining. I don't know what the studios do these days, but there's a beautiful movie from 1991. I think she's going to die at some point. There's this beautiful movie from 1991 starring a very young Christina Applegate in the same exact scenario where she's got to get a job. She falls in love. She has to watch the kids. There's a lot going on here. And this is told from the viewpoint of a black family, which, you know, that's what Hollywood does now. They did it with The Wonder Years. Now they're doing it with Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. So just going to take everything. So, gosh, black people. That's the sound bite for the week. Get canceled by my own people. I sound white, though, so they might not be able to tell, right?
No.
Did you see the original movie, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
Yeah, I saw it way back when, though. I don't remember a whole lot of it. I mean, like, I know, like you said, Christina Applegate had to be, like, the mom, right? Like, she had to fill in the position and just go through this whole thing of exactly what the title says.
So, like, not to spoil things for this new one or this one from 91, highly recommend, still kind of holds up, but mom jet sails. She's left with, they're left with a babysitter. Babysitter dies. Instead of, like, telling the police and everything, I don't remember what they do with the body, but Christina Applegate's character has to go get a job. She gets a job at a modeling agency. And then the only thing else I remember really is that there is a humongous party that she goes to. And then they have the modeling show at her house at the end where she gets caught by mom or something like that.
Right.
Is what I remember. Yeah, I could be wrong with a few really details. So I'm just excited to see kind of what they do with this one, with this remake or reimagining or whatever. But yeah, it was dubbed, it's Home Alone times 5 is what Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Home is. So, dead. So, team, with us on our socials, let us know your thoughts. I recommend you all watch the old one as well. It's on Cinemax. You can obviously get it on Prime Video as well. Team,
let Cinemax? Us know. Oh my goodness.
I'm on IMDb right now. It says streaming Cinemax Prime Video channels.
All right. That one needs to be updated.
I'm just reading, bro. Let us know your thoughts, team. All right. Rosuff, you ready to jump into this week's movie?
Yes, sir.
We have The American Society of Magical Negroes. This was released March 15th, 2024. This one was written and directed by Kobe Libby.
Oh, we didn't have a budget shown on this one, but it's grossed $1.3 million so far.
Make money, money, make starting money, this, money, have, money.
Oh, yeah. Starting on this one, we have Justice Smith as Aaron, David Alan Greer as Roger, Ann Lee Bogan as Lizzie, Drew Tarver as Jason, Michaela Watkins as Masterson, Aisha Hines as Gabbard. I think that's how to pronounce her name. I don't really remember. Tim Baltz as Officer Miller, Rupert Friend as Mick, and Nicole Byers as Dee Dee.
Yes, sir. All right, go ahead and give us a quick synopsis of this flick, sir.
So Aaron's life as a yarn artist is not going as well as he would like. And after a rough night at the art gallery, a man named Roger offers him a job. Aaron is tasked with helping white people feel more secure so they will be less dangerous towards black people. And he falls into a forbidden love with his client Jason's love interest, Lizzie, and ultimately discovers himself through his relationship with both Lizzie and Jason.
Yes, sir. All right, man. So let's start at the top. We got Justice Smith as Aaron. Meet Aaron, who is, this young black kid, this young black man. He's like 20 in his like mid-20s, so he's not a kid. But we meet him. He's kind of doing the art thing, not succeeding at it, kind of has a vision, but a vision is not really working out. In the event of the night, we meet him. He meets, I don't know, Black Merlin. I don't really know how to really discuss David Alan Greer, Roger's character and stuff, but takes him under his wing and kind of, it's an apprenticeship vibe in regards to this new job offer. Because Aaron is struggling with money, not doing well with talking to people, kind of always aware of his surroundings, and wants to be the smallest in the room ever. And it's just like his vibe. So you just know, like, he's a very shy, introverted person. At least that's what you kind of pick up. But it like develops later on and you understand like actually why he does what he does and how he acts and everything. So that's our main character, Aaron, and he's the one who kind of goes onto this weird journey we're gonna talk about in a few minutes here. But let's move forward here. We do have David Alan Greer as Roger. Let's talk about Black Merlin for a second, man. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he just kind of is there all of a sudden. We don't really build up to nothing, like, to the whole situation. He just jumps into it and immediately, like, both Justice Smith and David Alan Greer, like, for these two characters, they just like make you feel like super welcome all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like you're just there hanging out with them. And, as far as the character Roger, I mean, he just takes Aaron under his wing and just, seemingly nice guy.
Agreed.
Right. Even though, later on he talks about how everybody thinks he's very stern, whatever, and doesn't ever come off that way. Unless you kind of start breaking the rules, then he gets a little stern.
Yeah, and he gets a little pissed off there. So what Roger introduces Aaron to and takes him under his wing is a magical society. And this magical society is a job where the magical Negro basically helps make white people feel better about themselves and at ease and calmness. And the reason why, and this is where it kind of went off the deep end a little bit for me, is to prevent death and murder. Like, it wasn't like even subtle. Right. Like, that's the reason why.
No, that was never subtle through the whole movie at all.
We do this magical job to prevent white people from... I'm going to get so canceled this week. I feel it now. I had a white guy in my house this weekend, all weekend long. John's always invited to the cookout, though.
Yeah. Yep.
He's got a permanent card, damn it. But yeah, it started going off in the deep end. Is like, that's the sole reason as to why we do what we do, is to prevent white people from killing blacks and other colored folk. And at that point, I was just like, huh. Yeah, I don't want to do this job. Like, I don't want to be responsible for that. Right. You know what I mean? Like, that's almost like a Thanos level event. I don't want to be responsible for that at all. No, I'm good.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't want to do this. This is not me.
Right.
I don't want to make white people feel good and all this stuff. And, but you know, he's also low on funds. He spent his last $3,000-$4,000 on yarn that he can't get back. Oh man, that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting. Like the lead into him getting into the building, right, to the actual society, like,
yeah,
this whole the whole lead up to it, like with the ATM scene and all that, just all super weird, like, going into it. But at the same time, you know, could have been anybody that was in that situation. And it almost seemed like Roger put him in that situation. Like he was there to show him a point, right? Like, it wasn't an accident.
You know how, like, some people don't learn or understand something until it happens to them or they see it with their own eyes?
Yeah.
And those are the most frustrating people. I think Roger saw a lot of Aaron in himself and was like, this is how I'm going to handle this right here. Because at that ATM scene where Aaron was about to get into a fight, basically get his ass kicked, you see Roger in the background. He's across the street in the shadow. And I'm like, is he ever going to come through and help or anything of that nature? And he eventually does, you know? But it's almost like he kind of made that. You're right. It kind of feels like he made that whole situation happen. Because how often does a drunk girl tell you to put in her ATM number? Like, you know, like that never happened. We've been out partying in our youths. You know what I mean? In our street youth days, that's never happened, right? So it's almost like that scene was. It almost seemed like that scene itself was kind of produced. But I did, but like.
Yeah, I agree.
You know how you were saying that it was getting weird as far as like the lead up to finding out what this society was about and what they did? Like, as soon as he opened the. Like, he was in the barbershop and then opened it and then like they had to climb through like the other side and it closed back or whatever. Like
the little tiny door.
Even when they were like in Monticello and trying to talk about like the first American Negro, like magical Negro society was here. I was like, this is really weird, but I'm locked in. I'm locked in because
right. Agreed.
You know, this is different. I've never seen anything like this before. It's a weird twist on like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Let's see where this goes. And then coming to find out when, not to skip ahead, but Nicole Byers' character, Dee Dee, who's kind of like the lead of the entire society or whatever, says like what this is about. It's like, okay, that's a little weird.
I feel you.
But he takes the assignment. Well, I mean,
very direct. The whole thing is very direct.
They're not going to sugarcoat anything, at least, like what we're about. No, not at all.
There was nothing. And then the little meter things that were hitting like red and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
what's going on? White tears is what it was called. Wild, man. I saw this 10:30 last night. It was me and one other guy in there. It was just two brothers in there enjoying this movie, man. And we, it was just interesting. So he takes the job because he has no money. And his first assignment is this white guy at this tech company named Jason. And Jason has like his meter is almost broken because it's so far
explode.
Yeah, it's about to explode. But you know, you find Jason's motivations really quickly. You know, he wants to be the next like tech guru. He wants to be the next like big tech executive with his own yacht and a visor pointed to the side like this. You know, he wants all of that, right? So there's a lot of pressure on him himself. And so Aaron comes in to try to alleviate that pressure by making him feel good about himself, that his last project really wasn't his fault. You know, you're not a bad guy. You're not a racist for what happened over there in, like, what was it, Kenya or something like that? Ghana or something like that or whatever? That was not his fault. So, like, that's kind of the gig. Make white people feel good about themselves so they won't kill us. That's the whole end. Now, when Aaron and Roger was around that cop beforehand, like, that cop, if that cop's meter goes through the roof, he has the ability to do some damage. I never felt threatened by Jason, though.
No, not in the least bit at all.
Like, he's just some, like, punk young tech guy who's, like, obviously capable, but really, no, there was no threat there. So it was, like, weird to even plug Aaron with this guy because his – even if he does get pissed off and mad or whatever, his threat level seemed very, very low. Jason's character.
Agreed.
I want to talk about this kid for a second. We've all met this Jason before, right? Jason cares about getting ahead in life. Jason cares about Jason doesn't care about stepping over his friends or anybody else. He just wants to get ahead. He has a North Star.
Yeah.
And nothing's going to get in his way. He would like some help. He gets help from Aaron and Lizzie, but he also doesn't give them credit either. He's one of those guys.
Correct.
And we've all...
I mean, there's always people that know how to put, like, others in place for things to go better.
Yeah.
But, like I said, the downfall is... he didn't recognize them as people that helped him.
Nope. Not at all. Speaking of one of the other people who helped him, we have Lizzie. Anne Lee Bogan. as Lizzie. First off, I do want to say, as quiet and docile as Aaron is this entire movie, when he's trying to play off the whole coffee spilled on her thing in line and then checking her out, probably the smoothest move ever, right? He was like,
"It was good."
She was like, "You called me, you called me pretty or attractive." And he goes, "No, I didn't. I called you the most beautiful woman I've seen." And I was just like,
"So good, so good,
bruh." Okay, and he said it.
I mean, he had me on the hook, and he wasn't even talking to me.
Exactly. Yes. Like justice. I didn't know you had it in you. Gave her a little side eye too, and like, man, I'm like, dang,
yeah,
bro, I'm in love.
He was a super cool dude through the whole movie, though. The very end didn't get crazy, but you know, most of the movie was pretty chill.
Pretty chill, and that delivery, you know, that kind of opened his character up a little bit to know, like,
yeah,
he seems a little weird. He seems a little awkward, but the kid actually has game, and he's just like docile. When he feels comfortable, then he starts making his move. I appreciated that. I appreciated that a hell of a lot. But Lizzie wants to be on the come up at this tech company, Meatbox, as well. Terrible name for a company, by the way. I bugged out every time I heard that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So but, you know, she wants to be on the come up, so she's on the design team. She works with Jason. She has her own designs and aspirations and dreams and everything, but Jason's kind of the lead. He's kind of the Picasso around the office, so everybody kind of leans on him. And even, like, their boss, Masterson, gives him the lead project, even though she did all of the work. All of the work there. So,
yep.
Thing with Lizzie, man, like, she's that we all have, like, we've all, like, had that girl in our life as well, where it's just like, yeah, she's cool, she can hang out with the guys, but like, we're all actually attracted to her as well. And you know, it's like Highlander, there can be only one. So are we about to fight to the death with swords? Yeah, yes,
only one.
Yes. you know, so Aaron's digging her later, but his job in this, once again, is to help Jason out, his client. And when Jason starts digging her, Aaron has to back off. And from that point on, it's very little about helping Jason and more just a love story about Aaron.
Yeah,
I mean, Jason kind of deviates.
Yeah, he just kind of becomes just another dude that's like just a background character for a little while. But like all this stuff's going on, and yet he's still managing to get like this whole presentation together, which is pretty fantastic on its own.
Yeah. killing the game, bro.
You know, he's leading up to it, and he's like, "All right, well, I got everything I need. I don't need you guys now. I'd like you to be there. It's cool, but ultimately, you've done your job.
Be in the shadows and push the button, okay?
Yeah.
Be a good little boy and push the buttons there.
Yeah.
That was kind of the weird twist, man, is like once you come to find out that he can't have Lizzie, Aaron can't have Lizzie, it becomes this less of this woke type, maybe satirical comedy about the interworking relationships between blacks and whites. And that's just background for just this romance comedy triangle between these three, and how Aaron wants Lizzie and Lizzie wants Aaron, but Jason wants Lizzie. And Aaron can't have Lizzie, and you know, it's just like it's just a weird triangle thing that we're watching, and the whole wokeness commentary on black and white, it just falls to the wayside, man. And I think that's where this movie starts to falter. I'm like, I have seen rom-coms where there's a love triangle before. I didn't.
Yeah.
That could have been a part of this movie, but that overtook this movie. You know, does that make sense?
At the same time, there was. Yeah, but at the same time, too, Jason was never really, like, in the mix in the movie. Other than, like, the bar scene where they're talking. And then he says, like, I'm attracted to Lizzie. But after that, like you said before, he just disappears for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just Aaron and Lizzie for, like, most of the end of the movie.
But, like, he can't. But he can't. She's off limits because because of the society, right? So there's all these rules as well with being this magical Negro in this magical Negro society or whatever. This is a lot going on here. Moving forward, we also do have Michaela Watkins as Masterson. She's their boss. There we have Aisha Hands as one of the lead society people who tell all the stories. I love that every story was like, I think the first one was The Legend of Bagger Vance, but with instead of golf, it was pool. And then the second one was obviously The Green Mile. It was like, y'all really use these two movies to show this, man? Just great, like, interplay into, like, using those, but kind of switching it up a little bit. I did appreciate that. Tim Baltz was Officer Miller, Rupert Friend as Mick, and once you talk about Nicole Byer as Dee Dee as well. Just real quick, man, this takes place in L.A. The L.A. backdrop was cool. We spent a lot of time at Meatbox. Once again, I hate that name. But that's where we spent...
Yeah, just saying it is, it just makes you feel uncomfortable.
It's cringy, yeah. We spent a lot of time there at like a LA tech club or whatever. So, you know, there's a million and one of those. Yeah. But I think what they did with the backdrop of Los Angeles was cool. It was really cool to shoot, especially like that park scene. That tracking shot with him and Lizzie talking and really getting to know each other, her knowing his personality, he knowing her personality. I really thought that was a really cool scene. And even at the end when they're kind of walking hand in hand down the boulevard, man. So really cool, dope shots in this movie that I really did enjoy. Ready to just move forward with a theme, man. You ready?
Yeah, sounds good.
Kind of don't be afraid to be you is the vibe that I got here. And that's kind of Aaron's journey, right? Because even when he had, like, the job was actually perfect for him. And that's why I also think that, like, Roger thought he was going to be a good fit. You know, give him power to give him a little bit of confidence, but know that he's not going to, you know, with great power comes great responsibility and abuse his powers. I mean, that's the vibe, but that's all Aaron wants to do as soon as he gets his power is just abuse them, right? With everything. As soon as he finds out he cannot have Lizzie, that's all he wants and ruins it. Ruins it. At every turn. So
ruins it for everybody, pretty much.
I love how he's about to raise his hand, and then, like, we come to find out it was somebody else, and he's over there like, oh, God, thank God. Woo. But, yeah, I think the theme around this, man, is be yourself, be true to yourself. You know, you don't have to walk on eggshells around different people. You can be your genuine self. Totally, I think that's what this was about, so... All right. All right, team. So this was our conversation about the American Society of Magical Negroes. JV, give me your thoughts and ratings on this, brother.
So the whole of this movie, I enjoyed, you know, like you said, seeing the the scenes and Aaron and Roger and all the characters kind of working together. That's what played up the movie for me. I mean, the story was kind of weird.
Yeah.
going in and out of the whole thing, like the whole thing with Lizzie and Jason, and like he's supposed to have a client that he's not, you know, really working with that much, doesn't seem like. There's this weird love triangle that's not really, it's there, but we don't get to see much of it. You know, we're all about just Aaron and Lizzie the whole time. But other than that, the movie itself was good. Well, it was fun. It was funny. It was fun. David Lyden Greer was great. And really the whole cast did well for their parts they had. I'm going to give this one $3 of popcorn this week.
Nice, nice, nice.
Yes, sir. What about you?
That's how I feel about this movie, man. I like going into a movie.
Yeah, I had that.
And
I had that too.
I like going into a movie and like thinking it's going to be one thing and then it's something else, but that something else is like a delight. You know what I mean? Like you think you're about to drink water, but it's actually like pink lemonade. Pink lemonade is delicious, right? Like, oh, I'm about to get a sip of water. Pink lemonade. This was the total opposite.
Best
right
day now. Ever.
You know? Yeah. I'm going in and about to drink pink lemonade, got salivating for pink lemonade, and I get water. You know what I mean? Like that's what happens. Like, which means it wasn't bad, but I feel like they could have done so much. This could have been a movie with the setup of showing those conversations, showing that you're not supposed to be afraid or scared of conversations and making other groups feel better or about them. That's not our job. I wanted it to really lean into that. Even when he had his moment when he was yelling at Jason at the presentation, you know, it didn't even settle like if Jason actually understood. You know what I mean? One, you yelled at him where he probably couldn't fathom and understand all that, but the movie didn't really settle that for me to see, like, okay, are we coming full circle with this story? Because it leans so heavily onto the rom-com, will I get the girl, I want the girl, I can't have the girl thing, and that's that. That's it for the rest of the movie, which is, like, cool, but I didn't want that.
And there was barely any magic in the movie.
Well, hell, like, they didn't, according to you, like, they didn't even have a damn budget, so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like you lead this big thing and there's this whole thing going on and a society and all this stuff. And then he just kind of walk around the office.
Yeah.
We watch this dude have a day job on top of his day job.
That's actually.
like there's nothing.
That's the title right there. That's the title right there. My man had a day job on top of a day job.
I mean, really, that's what happened through like the whole middle of the movie.
Kiss.
Yeah. Yeah.
We watched The Office for 45 minutes, basically.
Yeah, it was like he made the computer and then he did the thing where he took her where she wanted to go. That was like the magic. The whole everything in between that was nothing but him working.
Yeah, he didn't even use it when he almost died going down the stairs, you know what I mean? So
that was actually pretty funny.
I thought that scene was gonna lead to something and it's like anticlimactic, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, Jason's like, they took their headsets off and Jason says, you almost died. He's like, yeah, I know. That was it. Which for me is like, it's like you said, it didn't really go anywhere, but that made me laugh regardless because it was so dull, like a dull joke.
Two buckets of popcorn anyways. For me, man. Two buckets. I wanted more from this, and it didn't happen. I was really stoked when we saw this trailer, because you know, I thought I was getting filet mignon, and I got chuck roast. Thank you for subscribing to this week's episode, talking through the American Society of Magical Negroes. Next week, we'll be discussing Ghostbusters: Frozen Empire.
That'll be playing in a theater near you.
I am Clyde Smith. You can find me across all socials. I am Clyde D. Smith.
I am Javier Villalobos. You can find me across all socials at Mr. J8200.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.